The Innocent, Chapter 13. The room was shrouded in darkness, the candles struggling to deliver the last of their luminance as the wick greedily consumed what was left of the wax. Feeling the strong grip on both of his hands, Dean half wondered whether someone would break the circle to switch the light on when they eventually died. Some people are scared of the dark. He never was. Not really. Even after he knew exactly what was there in the absence of light, hiding, waiting, the things that were there in the dark were there in the light, too. At least in the dark, you got the chance to hide. In the light, there was no hiding place. Raised voices, arguing over something. Probably him. He was trying his hardest to ignore it. Too many other things vying for his attention. He could give them their answers now. He didn't want to, but he could. They just needed to ask him. They needed to ask him and actually listen to what he had to say. Listen and act on it. Trust his judgment. But perhaps that was asking too much. His dad had never deferred to him, had never allowed him to win an argument. Not that Dean had ever really argued with him. Good training, Sammy had called it, though it hadn't been meant kindly. From the way Sam was shouting back at his dad, the training still hadn't stuck with him. What was wrong with not wanting to fight? She was still here. He was grateful that she hadn't left him yet, though she would soon. She'd spoken to him, told him everything she knew, which was far more than he was aware of. Then she spoke of them, the others, the ones that found themselves drawn to him. Part of that was Jefferson Marlowe's fault, but only part. Marlowe's persistent attendance on him gave the others a signal that he was approachable now, even when he wasn't listening. Apparently in the time before the accident that had robbed his father of the son he had once had, they had known that he was to be avoided. Even if they had been attracted to his presence, his role as a hunter was enough of a repellent to dissuade all but the most self-obsessed spirits. Now he wasn't a hunter. Now he was less of a threat. Now they came to him with things other than death, bloodshed, and mayhem in mind. Mom had said that he'd always attracted the dead, an idea that wasn't particularly reassuring. The possibility that there had always been invisible voyeurs shadowing his every move, watching everything he did, was incredibly worrying, especially given the kind of activities he had occasionally participated in the past. Had he been watched every time he spent the night in the arms of a willing girl? Every time he snuck out the motel door and... Best not to worry about things he couldn't change. And best not to think of his past sexual exploits when both of his parents were in the room. She was watching him even as she studied the other men in the room, the one that had been her husband, and the one that had formed from the baby she had rocked to sleep long ago. She was undisturbed by the growl and shouting, though she frowned whenever the language became more colorful. "Your dad would always say sorry if he swore in front of me. He did far too much of it when he first came home." Her smile faded a little. "I guess he's a soldier again now, though, isn't he? And he raised you and Sam to be soldiers, too." She moved around the room easily, less concerned now that Missouri would sense her. She knew that she would be able to think more clearly when she was around, but he knew that she was anxious to leave, anxious to get back to the house that had once been their home, the house where another mother now lived with her children. If he concentrated, he could hear the others now, though he tuned them in and out like the stations on an old radio, the signal occasionally getting concealed by static, sometimes getting one station overlapping another when their frequencies were too similar. There was the girl crying to be heard because she had not been for so very long, the elderly man that was enjoying his newfound lack of pain, the child who saw this newfound reality as a terrifying but inciting adventure, the lover who was taking a break from the supernatural stalking of his one-time beloved. There were many, all of them resisting the release that came with that accumulated time, all of them resisting the very idea of their lives being over. They knew they were dead, knew that that chapter was over. They just weren't willing to accept that the book was too. Refusing to accept the final the end, and were, instead, busily transcribing their own postscripts. For the most part, they didn't actually want to talk to him. They just wanted to be acknowledged, and in him they found a way to escape the bounds of their existence. No longer condemned to haunt a specific place or individual, now they could come to him, gather with others, and through something that not even his mother understood, commune with each other. Spirits from different eras who had met their ends in different ways were able to meet up with others while in his presence and actually socialize. He decided that there was something not quite right about that. The dead were meant to get peace by moving on, by letting go of the things that kept them anchored to the world of the living. He didn't want to be the social coordinator for the afterlife. What kind of freaking job description was that? "Dean?" She smiled. "Come on, sweetheart, I have to go. If you don't start talking to your daddy soon, you're going to have to do it without me." "Okay." Dean focused on his brother, found, surprisingly, that he'd forgotten that both of his hands were still being held. Even with the arguing, they still hadn't broken the circle. Missouri frowned at him, picking up on something no doubt but not being able to tune in like Dean could. She was still only listening to Marlowe. He was still there, whispering to her because Dean had never heard him, had never tuned him in, hadn't wanted to, hadn't, until today, even realized that he could. "He didn't mean to hurt me."
"Who, Marlowe?"
Dean nodded.
"Thought we were taking his son away."
"His son?"
The "his" was almost a snarl.
"He thought we were taking his son away? What about mine?" "John!" Missouri snapped, speaking harshly. She exchanged a brief look with Dean. There was no way she was going to let Dean think that John no longer thought of him as a son. Not when that wasn't true. There wasn't room for that kind of misunderstanding. Missouri pulled at John's hand until he turned to her, away from Dean. "What?"
"You don't use that tone with me, John Winchester. Not in my home." She let the anger leach out of her voice before she continued, allowing Jefferson Marlowe to say everything he wanted to. Dean, well, Dean was looking at someone else, behind her. She had her suspicions, but voicing them would serve no purpose. Jefferson Marlowe did not kill his boy. Though his son's disappearance led him quickly to his own grave, it was only then, after he died, that he discovered his boy had never left, that he'd been stolen away, killed by his own wife. When you went into the house, he tried to scare you away. It had worked with others, but he didn't know hunters. He thought you were taking his boy away. After he'd realized what he'd done, it was too late. He could no longer help his boy. He'd move on even before death had cooled his body. But he could help yours, John. Try to make amends. That's all he cares about now. Keeping Dean safe. Paying his debt." Dean could see, even from the profile of his father's face, that the anger hadn't dissipated. An angry John Winchester was a dangerous John Winchester. A very big part of Dean was suddenly glad that he didn't remember everything from his past. Instinctively, he knew. He just knew that some things were best left forgotten. "Dean?" He looked to her, voice as sweet as anything he had ever heard, and before yesterday, he hadn't heard it for 22 years. "Dean, I have to go, sweetheart. I told you, honey, I can't stay."
"You can. You could stay with me. You don't have to go back to that house."
"I do, baby. You, your daddy, and your brother do your bit to make the world a better, a safer place. I've been taking a leaf out of your book, doing some." She smiled as she tried the next word out for size. "Hunting of my own."
"Going after the bad guys?"
"Well, at the moment, just one." She smiled. and Dean was sure that every shadow shrank back into the gloom in its radiance. "Tell your daddy, Dean. Tell him what I told you." The smile slipped away, and she gave him a look that he thought only ever belonged on his father's face when he was a kid, one that meant that she was not prepared to be disobeyed. "I'm serious, Dean. Tell him." He looked to his father, and then to his brother, and released both of their hands. "Dean?" He got up slowly and moved to the light switch, filling the room with a light that could never rival the one that his mother cast. He looked to his mother, needed her reassurance before he spoke. "Follows me."
"What does?"
Dean shook his head. He didn't know what it was called, just knew it what it was, how it felt as it got closer.
"What does it want?"
"Me gone."
"Well, that's not going to happen."
John's angry retort was joined by a quieter query from Missouri. "Do you know why?" "Dead come to me." He sat down. Talking had never been so exhausting. "Don't move on. Cluttering up the place." John looked intently at his son.
"So this, whatever it is, wants you gone because you can what? Talk to the dead?"
"Listen more than talk." Sam chose that moment to join in with the conversation.
"Is this something that happened since your accident, or something that's more recent?"
He ran his hand through his hair. Now he had to say what he didn't want to admit. This wasn't a recent thing.
"Not at all."
"Before."
"Before?"
John frowned.
"What do you mean, before? Before the accident?"
He nodded, lowering his eyes, not wanting to see the anger and hate that may be aimed in his direction. They had been fleeting images, shadows that had passed unnoticed in the darkest night. Shadows do, after all, require some light to be seen. He trained himself to not see them, after Dad had started talking about things that weren't natural or normal being evil. Hadn't wanted his dad to think he was evil. It was a logic that had made sense when he had been 6 years old. As a child, he trained himself unconsciously not to see them. As an adult, he'd not remembered that he'd ever been able to, not until he started seeing again. There'd been the feelings of someone looking over his shoulder, the feelings of being observed. Paranoia Sam had called it the one time he'd mentioned it. That didn't explain how sometimes he'd known there was something there before his EMF meter had signaled presence, but he happily dismissed it as coincidence. Stranger things, after all, do happen. Seeing them again, letting them know that he could, had only just started happening, right after old Mr. Lanyon had died. He'd been a lovely old man, had spoken to him every day at Fieldcrest, even when Dean wasn't talking back. They'd watched TV together. Mr. Lanyon had liked the soaps, and he'd shouted the questions at the screen during Jeopardy. The old man hadn't realized he was dead when he came to say hello that last day, and Dean hadn't wanted to upset him. Dean had to tell him eventually, after he freaked when Kathleen had walked through him. He'd taken it quite well. He told them he wasn't surprised. Not really. Had been kind of expecting it, and then he'd smile. They'd carried on watching Jeopardy and Days of Our Lives together for the next 2 weeks, and then he'd said goodbye. Things were getting a little too crowded for his liking. That was when Dean had realized that there were other people around who shouldn't be. That was when the shadows showed that they held so much more. That was when he remembered that it wasn't something new. He'd missed Mr. Lanyon, but that hadn't meant that he'd wanted to talk to any of the others. Mr. Lanyon had been his friend before he died. He'd ignored the others.
even the miserable old bastard from down the corridor who went on the prowl every night being as rude and abrasive in death as he had been in life. Missouri handed out the coffee, even though she knew both the men sitting in front of her probably wanted something a lot stronger. Dean had been in bed for over an hour, and the mood in the house hadn't improved any since then. John couldn't get over the fact that his son had kept this ability a secret from him. He was seething, but he didn't know where to direct his anger. Dean would be the easy target, but it would be unfair. He could recognize that. There were reasons why a child would lie about things that may get him into trouble, either real or imagined, especially when he believed that it would make his one remaining parent treat him differently. To the child Dean had been, John knew what scared Dean, the possibility that his father would not trust him with his little brother anymore, even the chance that the same father wouldn't love him anymore. And it hurt, because it meant that he'd never managed to convince his son that his love was unconditional, that his son had grown up believing that he might stop loving him, that he might turn his back. It was another way he'd failed as a father. One more thing to add to a very long list, that Mary could kick his butt for if he were ever to see her again. Sam, for his part, had stayed mostly silent. His father had to work out his parenting issues by himself. He was not about to tell his dad that he'd been a fabulous father, not when there were times when he hadn't been. He had to accept, though, that even if he hadn't been wonderful, he'd always done what he thought best. Sam would once have surprised himself that he could think that way. He hadn't always. In fact, until he was 18, his father was the man he disliked the most of all the men he had known while growing up. He had told himself that he just hadn't understood the man. But if he was being honest with himself, he could see now that it was because he had recognized in his father a few of the things he had never liked in himself. "Get over it, John," Missouri chided. "You can't change the past." John sipped the coffee and nodded. It was true, but he could still try to think of a way to make up for it. "Any ideas on what you think it might be? 'Cause I'm at a loss here." Missouri shook her head. "Not my specialty, John. I'm not up on the old research. There are people you know that'll know more than I do. I guess I could call around. Jim may know something. So might Bobby. There's always Caleb and Joshua, too, not to mention the guys out at Bill's." John looked at his watch. It was fast approaching midnight. Though the world of hunters did not keep strict schedules, it was not sensible to call a hunter at this particular time. They could, after all, be in the middle of a hunt. Hell, that could be true at any times of the day, but he tried to make a point of not calling anyone between midnight and 2 if he could avoid it. Memories of spooking that black dog when he hadn't turned his phone off came flooding back. Still had the scars to prove that that had been a grave error. He hadn't had the heart to blast Sammy over that one, though. Dean had been in the hospital with a concussion, and Sam had just wanted to let him know. He never forgot to turn his phone off after that, but it was possible other hunters could make the same oversight. He swallowed the rest of the coffee and stood up, taking the empty cup over to the sink and rising it under the tap. "I'm going to hit the sack. I'll have an early start in the morning." He didn't say goodnight, just walked up the stairs to the room he was sharing with Dean. His son didn't stir as he entered, and John carefully closed the door behind him.